Hello, everybody. Today I'm with Adele Corrin. She's a transformational relationship and communication coach with a business coaching couples and individuals who are craving authentic, fulfilling relationships. She believes that everyone can develop the skills they have to have the kind of love they really deserve. She herself is a divorced mom and registered nurse with multiple coaching and hypnotherapy certifications. Her approach is holistic, compassionate, really grounded in real life with tangible skills. She constantly stretches herself via her own practices of meditation, rigorous exercise, working with her own coaches, and much more. And she loves bringing what she learns to her clients. When she's not doing some sort of personal growth, you can find her eating steak frites at the French restaurant around the corner from her home in Washington, D.C., or flying to South America for another travel adventure. Welcome, Adele.
Thank you, Heather. Thanks so much for having me back.
Oh, you're very welcome. Adele and I have been colleagues for some years now. We met during the conscious uncoupling training, and that's absolutely delightful. It gives us a sort of depth and trust and knowledge of each other, which allows us to talk freely. And last time we were here, we did a sort of overview of her work, and we've come back for a second go. And this time it's focused on should I stay or should I go? Ah, what a big question, Adele.
Oh my goodness, it's such a conundrum. It really is.
Yeah. How does that show up with the people that come and see you?
Oh, well, the people who come to see me in this stage, one of the first things they say is they just feel so stuck. They feel confused. There's so many, they often tell me about all the good things about the person they're with, as well as all the negative things. And how much they've been trying. These people who come in who are anyone who's going to actually book a session with someone like me, right, is someone who's been trying really hard already. And, all the therapists they've been to and the books they've read, and they've been doing this stuff for years, and still they just can't decide what to do. And so they come in with like a ton of frustration and stress, wanting more, but really not knowing if it's possible or if it's even like, or if they even kind of deserve it a lot of times.
Okay, right. So it sounds like these are people who really take life seriously, who want something richer and more fulfilling. They're sort of dissatisfied with the status quo.
Yeah, exactly. The people who come in are the kind of people who really want to grow and evolve. They want to have, happiness. And part of that is having a fulfilling and a really authentic relationship. And so, when they don't have that, despite all their hard work, it's like really disheartening for them.
Yes, I can see that. And then the pull might be quite strong if they're with a partner who isn't in the same mindset.
Oh, absolutely. And I see this a lot, that we're all different. And what's mattering most to these people is, like I said, something along the lines of growth, evolution, maximizing their time on this planet. It's like they're really, these people tend to be driven, and then so often they're with someone who's kind of saying, well, why rock the boat? What we have is good enough. Maybe things aren't spectacular, but we have been together all this time. We have children. Why mess things up? And both view, it's not that one of those is right and wrong. Both of those viewpoints are valid. We all crave stability and safety, and we also all crave growth and learning, but sometimes, we lean more towards one of, or the other. And what so often happens is these people kind of get in this argument about who's right and who's wrong about that. And the way I see it is there's no right or wrong. It's just a difference,
And from my point of view, my previous days as a psychotherapist, I can see that the people craving security, maybe in a couple of groups like that, they're probably people who always had security, so that's just what they expect. Or they're probably people who didn't have any security, who really crave it and are very, very defensive about losing it and frightened about losing it. Whereas the others, they may have had a similar upbringing, but they've come at it from being really driven to come out of it and change. And quite often, I think, sorry, I'm keeping going, but I'm just thinking, quite often the perception that they're more likely to be the reflectors of the world, who could see things going on in their families and it wasn't right for them, and they want something different.
Yeah, and I think that, look, we know that the way we grow up really shapes us. And I don't think it's necessarily that one, the person who's craving stability was necessarily raised one way and these people were raised a different way, but it's the way that we have like developed our I don't know, our strategies, the things that really matter to us as a result of it, right? And yeah, I think that's true. I think that these people who are so driven to grow and evolve, there's something within them that sees problems and wants to change them. And it's like they have this deep-seated belief that like I can change. If I can change something, why wouldn't I? Why would I stay in this unhappy place if I don't absolutely have to?
Absolutely. And I think that there may be something in our culture more broadly that there are more of those people around. It's more fulfillment, self-fulfillment is more in the zeitgeist and connection.
You know what? That's a really good point. When people often talk about, the old days, when people tend to glamorize it, oh, our grandparents and great grandparents stayed together for 85 years and nobody got divorced back then. And what's going on? People today are just selfish. I hear that a lot. Now, the people who are saying that are the kinds of people who really crave that stability and that security. And I do think our culture, I mean, I'm in the US, obviously, here in the UK, and but like I can speak for, being an American, right? Like we're all about, self-fulfillment, and people can see that as selfish. You can also see it as, embracing opportunities and wanting to grow. And I do think there's more and more of an emphasis on that. And maybe since, I refer to Oprah all the time because, I grew up watching Oprah after school. And, I know my parents and grandparents didn't. And I think like I always think about her because she's someone who kind of brought it into the culture to prioritize personal growth and being able to talk about things. And so, and there are all these kind of influences out there that are like encouraging that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And if you've got that in you, it's not something I can acknowledge. I've got it in me. I can't put a cork in it. It just builds up the pressure. It's like shaking champagne. There's a lot of pressure builds up.
It's so true. I remember that metaphor reminds me of another one that one of my friends gave me back when I was married and very in this place myself. And she would say to me, think about like if you're at the ocean and you have a beach ball and you're trying to hold it under the waves, you can do it for a little bit, but ultimately it's just going to like come back up because you can only force something down for so long. And if this is like an essential part of who you are, the more you try to repress it, I think the more tension builds up, and it ends up creating like a lot of stress and unhappiness.
It's the proverbial rock and hard place, I think. So let's have a think about the steps that you'll work through with somebody, because I think to some degree people need to know this so they can think about it for themselves, that what they need to do to grow. But also, I think we need to tell them, what you do and how they can find you so that if they want to work with you, they can. So we're looking at from the point of view, shall we stay or shall we go? What do you do when somebody walks through the door and says that to you?
Well, the first thing I do is, have a long, a 60-minute call with them to really find out exactly where they are. And it's really important to me from the get-go to really get someone. To really, I'm always listening for, what really matters to this person. And like we were saying, so often they've been told, what you want isn't okay, it's not valid. And so from the get-go, just like knowing that someone cares about what matters to them and really seeing them is like so important. So that's like the beginning of the whole thing right there. And so often what these people are asking me about initially is, okay, well, what do I do about this other person I'm with? Like, is there any hope that they might change? And how long do I keep trying? So one of the first things I kind of have to explain to them, gently, is that ultimately this is all going to come down to you. And the way we're going to figure this out isn't by traditional couples therapy, just like listening to each other. It's also not about trying to get the other person to change. It's going to come down to you. And so I have a system that I go through with an individual who's stuck in this place. So, and usually these people get it, right? Because they are the kinds of people who are already interested in growth. Would you like me to give you kind of an overview of the steps I work through with them?
Well, let's go through one step at a time, I think, because you're looking, because I think it's a rich process, and I think if we whiz over, we might miss something.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're making connection to begin with. What sort of state are they in? You're making connection to take care of their feelings and really see them. But what sort of state are they in when they come to you?
A lot of frustration, oftentimes resentment. Feeling like dissatisfied, unfulfilled. But if someone is, by the time they're going to book a call with someone like me, it's usually reached kind of a boiling point. There's too much built up unhappiness and like this feeling of angst, or almost if, and I don't know here just the right feeling word for this, but like being boxed in and trapped. Like
So,
I'm trapped here and I've got to get out.
yeah. So it's not necessarily I've got to get out of the relationship, but I'm trapped inside. I've got so many emotions that I've got nowhere to go. I'm super stressed inside.
Well, that's true, although I think most of them see it as the relationship is what's trapping them.
Right.
They wouldn't necessarily know that, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, got you. So what do you do as a first step?
Okay, so once I start working with someone, the very first step is what I call befriend. And I've made up kind of these words that are a little bit, even to my ears, sound a little bit cheesy sometimes, but the word is befriend. And so the reason I call it that is because that when people come in to me, I mean, in every case, but especially when someone is feels like their relationship or their marriage is what's trapping them, they tend to be very self-critical and they'll say horrible things to themselves. I must be a terrible person, And so the very first thing I do is I want them to develop a lot of self-compassion and or self-empathy, you could call it. And so what's really important about that is that when we are so stuck in these difficult emotions, we feel trapped and there's no way out, we have to find a way of working with those really difficult emotions in order to make any progress. Because it's kind of like, that fight or flight thing. So when we're so hijacked by emotions, we can't think clearly, we can't see possibilities. And these are people who are trying to make a decision, a really important decision. And you can't possibly make a good decision when you're like so freaked out. So the very first thing I do is help them. And this is about so much more than just like talking and listening. I like to give them a specific tool to use. And not everybody takes advantage of it, but in an ideal world, I give them this tool to use, and it's something they use every day so that they are really building a skill that will, be with them forever.
And how to take care of their own feelings and their own
Exactly.
needs.
Exactly.
Yeah, how
Exactly.
to understand themselves.
Exactly. How to understand themselves and how to soothe themselves, rather than doing that thing we often do, which is distract ourselves by staying busy. Or, that's a favorite one of my clients, right? Because these are tend to be really successful people. They stay busy. But there can be more thing, there can be other things we do that are much more destructive. But staying
Yeah.
busy is the favorite one, or pretending like you're not really bothered when you are.
Yeah. And there's other things, I guess, the stress relievers, like alcohol, food,
Right.
over-exercising, under-exercising, oversleeping, not sleeping at all, getting addicted to your phone, playing video games, even,
Yeah, we all have our strategies, right? And one thing, I've really been was talking to you before, we started recording about this work with nonviolent communication I'm doing, which is like so amazing. And what I love about it is it brings in a lot of our conscious uncoupling concepts are embedded in this process. Oh my gosh, where was I going with that? Oh, I know. So one of the things they talk about is all these things we do, the unskillful things, right? The drinking and the gaming and the whatever we choose to do. They're all just strategies to try to get our needs met. And that's it. And so when we can see that these things we do or other people do, like even though they might on their face be very unhealthy or harmful or, we're all just trying to do the best we can to get our needs met. That's it.
So great. So that's the first bit, that you help a person really feel secure in themselves, have understanding of themselves, take care of themselves, relieve their stress, self-soothe. Yeah. Where'd you go next then?
So the step two I call empower. And then in this step, this is really about coming to terms with the idea that at the end of the day, all we can control is ourselves. And so often, like I said, even though the people who come to me are the kind of people who work on themselves and are really take charge people, I think it's kind of human nature that when we're in a difficult relationship, we tend to look at the other person as the cause of our problems and we want to change them. I mean, I know I did this. I've done this a lot of times. And we tend to think, oh gosh, if they would only change this thing, then everything would be okay. And we can expend an enormous amount of energy trying for that to make that happen. And the sad thing is, the more you try, the worse the relationship gets. So in this step, it's really about, helping them build a lot of confidence and power within themselves to really focus on what they can control, and what can we control? Ourselves. And barely that sometimes, but at least, as they're developing that skill of the emotional regulation. And then in this step is a lot more about like the mindset, I guess, around it, just seeing, okay, well, I can't do anything about that person, whatever they're doing or not doing, but I can listen to this recording. I can soothe my own emotions. I can work on communicating. I can go for coaching. These people end up feeling much more like confident and even powerful, powerful in a healthy way, seeing, okay, where can I make changes that will help me?
Yeah,
Does that make sense?
really, yeah, really taking care of yourself. So that is learning learning what's really important to you and taking steps to get it. And I'm not going sort of too far out with this. I'm sort of thinking about what do I really need? What do I want? How have I stopped nourishing myself in ways that I really need to be nourished?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And this is why, to go back just a minute to the first step. So the steps are building on each other, right? So one of the very first things I do, and I know you're familiar, Heather, with the feelings and needs lists from our book. I give my clients feelings and needs lists, and I give them a document so that, whenever there's a difficult feeling coming up, or ideally they practice it several times a day, even without a difficult feeling. They'll actually look at the list and write down what they're feeling. They'll look at the lists and tune into, okay, well, what's the need that's under the feeling? And so we aren't even aware of what we need. I know I wasn't. And when I say need, I mean think broad things like support, love, acceptance. I'm not talking about I need a hug or I need a candy bar. Those things are strategies. They're not the needs. But what's great about this, and what I really see in my clients who actually practice this, is they do start understanding, oh, wait, I do have needs. And we all have needs. And, I'm coaching them through this, right? These needs are universal. There's nothing wrong with you that you have this need for connection or for growth or to matter to someone else, right? And so the more people practice this and understanding that that feeling they have is because one of their needs isn't being met. And so it gives them like this permission to have the feeling and have the need. And they start connecting things and they start realizing, okay, oh wow, so I do have this need that hasn't been met. And then we could start brainstorming, what are some of the ways I could go about getting that need met? Does that make sense? Okay.
Yes, it absolutely does. It absolutely does. And that's very powerful. They're very simple words for a very powerful thing.
Very. And I know so many of us, one thing I've noticed, we tend to think men are especially stunted when it comes to knowing what they feel and certainly knowing what they need. And maybe to some extent that's true, but I mean, I can speak for myself. I know that working on this has been extraordinarily difficult for me. I never knew what I felt. The first time I went to a therapist, I remember she asked me what I was feeling. I was like, I don't know. I feel fine. That was my standard answer. And I also kind of was, I tended to think of myself as not having needs, not being needless. And I see that in so many of my clients. They just
Yes.
aren't tuned into it at all.
No, I think they've followed the strategy. This is what I see. Often they've followed the strategy of trying to fit in because their
Oh.
needs necessarily didn't necessarily fit in with their family of origin. They might have been the odd one out in the family in some way. Or I tend to put it, which is an interesting angle, the sane one in a crazy family. Like if nobody else has any acknowledgement of feelings and needs in the family, and you have feelings and needs, you're going to find ways of handling that yourself because they're not going to get met there. So
Yeah.
often what you do is look after everybody and you get your feelings and needs met by reflection rather than by immediate action towards you. So you get your kudos by being the good girl who
So
looks
many of my clients are the caregivers, the good ones. The ones who it happened just yesterday. One of my clients said, "Oh, I had to raise my sister from the time she was, I don't know how old she was, but he was only 13, paying the mortgage at only 13." And that puts such it's such a burden, especially on a child. And it's like so many of these people are have become over responsible, and as a result it's like, okay, I'm going to prioritize everyone else and don't even think about themselves.
So what I see then is the converse of it happens, that In relationship, somehow we expect that part of us that was neglected in childhood to be met in relationship. So we expect the partner to be the parent we never had. And we've often chosen them because they're familiar in the pattern.
Totally.
Like our parents, you know?
And since we don't know, if I reflect on myself and the things I learned going through the conscious uncoupling, we coached each other. For those of you who don't know about this method, when I went through conscious uncoupling training, we had to coach each other. And I learned so much through that. And I can see very clearly now what I did. And of course, my needs weren't getting met, but it wasn't because of who I was married to. It was because I didn't even know. I didn't know what I felt or what I needed, or let alone how to express that.
So you've got self-soothing and self-understanding, and then moving into the power of choice. Where do you go from there?
So, once we have learned those kind of, what I consider basics, the things we really need, people are ready to do a really deep work. So the step three is this really deep work, which I call release, and it's about letting go of the patterns that we've established and the beliefs we have about ourselves that are really holding us back. And it's kind of like you can't, if you, this is like maybe a silly metaphor, but it's like if you want to redecorate your house, you can't do that until you take out all the old dirty furniture first and make space for something new. So that's what we're doing. We're letting go of all this old junk that's holding us back. So to be more specific, this is, it's about taking a deep look at what's underneath the things that we do and the people we've attract. People often say, oh, I'm a people pleaser, or I'm anxious, or I attract a lot of toxic people. But it's looking at really what's underneath that, which tend to be these limiting beliefs we have about ourselves. So the way I work with this step in several ways, but one of the biggest ways is I do, I'm trained in a method called RTT, or Rapid Transformational Therapy, that helps us get to the root of what it is we're believing about ourselves and helps us transform that. So when you transform the way you're believing, the way you're thinking, then the way you're acting can change more easily. It's not as difficult to do something different, which is really what this all ends up being about. It's like if we want to make a change, we have to do something different. And it's so much easier to do something different when your thoughts and your beliefs are lined up. Because, yeah.
When you're in that more grown up overviewing self rather than in the child self that is seeing the world through a 5-year-old's or a 10-year-old's lens or a 13-year-old lens or a 17-year-old lens who is bringing up the 13-year-old. You're just about cobbling together a sense of an adult, but it's not a supported adult. It's not a sort of congruent collection of all your parts. It's like fitting together a jigsaw from all sorts of different puzzles. But the way that you work, which I've seen and experienced for myself through having some rapid transformational therapy with you, that you give something to a deep level, which is a personal recording tailored to each person's needs to really address those old core beliefs. And through hypnosis and deep care, very skilled analysis of what each individual person's feelings, needs, and beliefs are, you create that personal recording to listen to, which is very, very liberating.
The recording's a big piece of it. So I like to tell people that, to make it simple, that, we all have this voice in our head that tends to say not very nice things. And it's like it's on auto repeat. You know, it's like if you installed a tape, and that got installed in our brains sometime really young. And it's ultimately the way we're thinking about ourselves. So, you know, and just to give like an example in case people listening are like, what is she talking about? You know, a lot of times people, I would say hardly ever are people aware of what this deep stuff layer is. But if you pay attention, you know, to your thoughts, they're leading you in a certain direction, right? So the core belief might be something like, I'm unlovable, or I don't matter. And you might even hear those exact words in your mind, but regardless, the words tend to be really negative and self-critical. So what we're doing in that recording is I am giving people a new script that will be on, hopefully, on autopilot in their minds, as opposed to the old recording. And so the recording is just full of encouraging, incredibly positive, really powerful language. And when you listen to it repeatedly, it becomes, you know, embedded in your subconscious mind, just the way the old stuff was. So it's really transformative.
Yeah, it is. It's liberating. It separates the past from the future for me in
Right.
awareness and clarity and choice.
Exactly. There's even a lot of language in the recording about, or maybe not so much in the recording, but prior to the recording, about the past being done. And people gain a lot of awareness during the session that the beliefs they formed were formed by a child's mind, and they were never actually true. And that now, as an adult, we have a choice to believe the things we want to believe. And when you really see that and start hearing it over and over and over again, it really does change us.
Yeah. What's that lovely quote at the start of a book? I think the past is another country. They do things differently there.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, and another part of the session I just want to mention that's so healing for people, maybe the most healing part sometimes, is I have the client talk to one of their parents. It's almost always a parent. It could be someone, another grown-up in their lives, but someone who in their mind caused some kind of harm to them. And through this conversation, they come to see that this person just didn't have the capability or the skills, or didn't, you know, really know that they were lovable or worthy, and that it was never about the client being defective in some way. It was never about them. And so once they can like separate that out and then see this person as like, you know, someone that they actually have compassion for, who's trying the best they could, that ends up being really healing too. And they think, oh gosh, this was never about me. My mom just didn't have the wherewithal. That's it.
Yeah. Do you mean literally talking to them or metaphorically talking to
Metaphorically,
them?
because sometimes these parents are dead, or they live in another state, or they wouldn't want to have the conversation. So it's not something that has to take place in real life.
Yeah. So it's helping your individual person working with you to get their picture of their parent clear and have an overview.
Yes. Thank you for asking that. It wasn't clear.
I know sometimes I ask people to write a letter to their parents, and that you can see sometimes they just go, not to send, just to
That's
get your
not the
feeling
important,
across.
that's not the important part. But I will say I have seen with a number of clients almost an immediate impact with their relationship with the parent if they're still alive. I had one client one time who had this really powerful conversation with her mother that she wasn't totally estranged from, but she really hardly ever saw her. And right after our session, like an hour later, her mother called her and offered to come visit. And
Woo.
she was saying, you don't understand, this never happens. And so, you know, I have to think that's related.
It does give you the chills when those sorts of coincidences go on. You do wonder about some sort of connections between us that are completely unseen and unknown. Yeah.
I believe it because I've seen it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Multiple times. Yeah. So, where'd you go when you've done the release and the RTT?
So after we've done all that, it's like, I've said you've cleared away the old furniture. So now it's time to create something that you are really excited about. So I think of step four as being the fun part. And so I call it create. It's about consciously creating the life and relationships you really want. And so in the past, when we have all this garbage or conditioning cluttering us up, we're creating our lives, but we're doing it by default. And so once you have new beliefs and all these some new skills, you're able to actually create what you truly want. And so, I try to help them have fun with the process, and so there are different ways we do this. There can be some visualizing, helping people really get into that feeling of possibility, of positive expectation, as opposed to what we usually do, which is I hear it all the time with my friends, for example. Oh, there are no good men out there. I'll never find anyone, and then guess what? It's not going to happen. So helping them build, a lot of positive expectation. And then we can even do fun things like vision boards and kind of get into a little bit of the like manifesting work. And people have fun with it.
Sounds lovely. And do they ever choose to stay when you're going through this process? Does the other person inadvertently grow with them? How does it work?
Thinking about that, I've not met anyone yet for whom that's happened. I'm not saying it's possible. I'm not saying it's not possible. I think it is totally possible, but I've not seen it happen.
Yeah.
I have not. And I think there's a good reason for that. I think the reason is that by the time people come to work with me, they actually truly are wanting something different for themselves. They really know this relationship isn't going to work, but it's like they need to give themselves permission. And
Yeah.
that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. It's really fundamental, isn't it? Because it's permission to live differently from how you've adapted yourself to live in a state where your feelings and needs don't matter, or you're not important, or worthy of being cared, or feeling lovable. Once you
That's
can
right.
see, yeah, once you can see beyond that, you can see you can't live in those too tight shoes anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. That's really, really, really important. And so these people, that's what's keeping them stuck in that place. It's like they're thinking it's not okay to want what they want, to need what they need, to feel the way they feel. And that they're a bad person if they prioritize themselves and thinking I'm hurting this other person if I leave them. So it ends up being a lot of times some of the work in that step three that I was just talking about, a lot of times it's around releasing the belief that I'm somehow bad if I were selfish, if I prioritize myself. And some of this is simple reframing too, right? Like that ultimately it's not going to be good for the other person or for the relationship if you stay just because of a sense of obligation.
Yeah, that's a hell of a message to give somebody. I'm just going to stay with you because I feel duty bound. Yeah. Yes, that's dead in the middle.
It really is. I actually had a call with someone yesterday that this was a really interesting situation. I'm not going to go into details because, it was a confidential
Obviously.
conversation, but more than anyone I'd ever spoken to, this was just a first call, first time we've ever met, was very sure that they wanted to honor their own needs. And they were saying, you know what? I have these needs and they're important to me and they haven't been met for years. And I can't keep on like this. It's not healthy for me. And at the same time, I see that my partner has these needs, and I really want to support and love this person and help them get as many of their needs met as possible. And so I've never met anyone that was so balanced in terms of, you know, I've got my needs matter just as much, even though the partner's needs, a lot of people from the outside would think that the partner's needs were more important because this person had a lot of issues. But yeah, it was kind of beautiful to see.
A sense of a global view of their relationship.
Yeah. That like, and this is at the heart of this communication style, which I keep talking about all the time because I'm so into it. But at the heart of it is everyone's needs matter equally. And there is a way that we can, you know, maximize the everybody getting their needs met. So it's not about me or you. Like, oh, I get my needs met, that means you don't, or you get yours met and I don't. No, it doesn't need to be like that. There are ways that we can, there are creative solutions to everybody getting, being supported.
Yeah. So this is where you're moving into your step five, is learning all these new skills. Tell me about step five.
Yeah. So step five is really about putting everything together. I call it live and love, because it's about really working together to solidify the learning that we've just solidify the learning up to this point. And, you know, there are inevitably bumps in the road. So in this step, we're really just practicing and readjusting. And in this step, we're doing a lot of specific practice around communication skills, which, you know, I told you at the very beginning, we're working on identifying the feelings and needs. And that's kind of the first building block to being able to communicate well. Because one thing I've learned is, gosh, I wish I'd known this a long time ago. We can't possibly communicate with another person unless we know what we feel and what we need. And we also can't do it if we're not able to see another person with compassion and empathy. So we've been gradually like building these skills, and we're doing a lot of practice stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, and also, you know, I think this is an important thing to remember. A lot of my clients will get frustrated with themselves because they made progress and then they slip. They've developed a healthy habit, and then they stop doing that thing. So I really like to build in time to kind of coach them through those times and help them realize, okay, look at all the gains you've made. You know, maybe you're not, you know, you're not doing this thing every day, but look at where you were when we started. And that's really powerful for them. I'll just say that another thing I'm a big fan of is, like, I really nerd out on habits, because I see a habit as the way that, you know, your life really changes. You know, your life doesn't change if you do something once or twice, but if you do something every day, your life can change. It's like going to the gym. You know, you got to go to the gym a lot before you see changes. So I'm helping them build healthy habits. And sometimes it's not even relationship specific. You know, I'm helping them build healthy habits around, you know, their health, and I'm encouraging them to meditate every day. And some of my clients start working out for the first time. And this is all important and it's all relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the things that I know from working with you, because ours wasn't centered around relationship. And I've got very different habits and ways of being from focusing on those things.
Oh, yeah. And, oh, good.
Yeah. It's, and I think it's a beautiful process, and you integrate things so very well. You know, it's partly why I want to talk to you, because I want to share what you do. I want other people to know about it as well. So yeah. I guess we need to tell them where to find you.
Yeah, so it's pretty easy to find me because everything is just my first and last name. My website is Adele Curran. It's AdeleCurrin.com. My Instagram is the same. My handle's at Adele Curran. I'm on Facebook, Adele Curran, but I'm not all over social media. I'm just using those two right now, and my website, and through the website, people can book a free call. I'm actually about to include some other interesting things on my website, like some resources that people can just grab for helping them, you know, immediately communicate better. So
beautiful.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I'd love to talk to anybody, who's stuck and just doesn't know what to do, or is really looking for clarity.
Yeah, I love free resources because it actually gives people a chance to see who you are and this too now, and gives them a flavor of what you do so they can taste before they buy.
Yeah, I agree. And for whatever reason, I'm really interested in something that's tangible and practical. So, the resources I offer are things that, I mean, obviously you have to put them into practice, right? But they're things that, like, if you implement them, you're going to see an actual change. So it's not just, this is why I'm not a big fan of just talking, like just talk therapy. Where does that get you? I mean, it might gain you some insights, but like, I think people really want to change. They want to transform. And so to do that, you have to know how. So I'm a big fan of doing that.
Yes, I completely agree. I completely agree. Thank you so much, Adele. It's been
Thank you,
wonderful having you
Heather.
here.
It's been really fun. I love talking about this, and I love talking to you. So put the two together. It's been really fun.
We're having a win-win.
Yeah, exactly. Have a
Thank
great day.
you.
Thank you.